Neither my colleague, Dr. Edwards, nor I have personal financial relationships with commercial interests relevant to this presentation. So I have three objectives. They are to increase the awareness of the United States Preventive Services Task Force mammography guideline process, describe the public's interest in mammography guidelines, and to explore the public's to explore implications in general. The United States Public Health Service Task Force was established in 1984 by the Public Health Service, and it is a congressionally mandated non-federal body of experts who have expertise in primary care, medical specialties, preventive medicine, nursing, and behavioral science. And also, as well, they have expertise in analytic science. Their mission is to develop evidence-based recommendations for preventive services, and they are supported by the Agency for Healthcare Quality and Research. So there's a very set sequence for the development of the guidelines that the Agency for Healthcare Quality and Research has established. Under the guidance of the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, they then, both the USPSTF and AHRQ confer with the evidence-based practice centers, known as the EPCs, on the bottom of the inner circle here. And they use specific research criteria to address a clear research question. And in this case, it was pertaining to the benefits and the harms of mammography screening. What you can see then happens is that there's an analytic framework that uses population modeling techniques to compare explicit health outcomes and to, in this case, to address the strategies of mammography, particularly as they also apply to the starting and ending ages of screening for breast cancer. The EPC then presents their data to the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, who then assesses the quality and the sum of the evidence and the net benefits. These information are then released in the form of recommendations. Here you can see the differences in breast cancer screening guidelines, most recently the 2009 guidelines, and on the left they have the start dates, and on the right are the stop dates. By comparison, I have the American Cancer Society guidelines. What I'd like to do is to draw your attention only to the mammography guidelines, which is what I'm going to focus on. And the evidence suggests that from randomized trials that mammography screening does reduce breast cancer mortality by 15% in those women between the ages of 39 to 49. So the resulting guideline recommendations were that women who were under 50, if they needed guidelines, this was through a physician consult. Women in the 50 to 74-year-old age group, mammography screening was now on a biannual basis. If you look over to the right, you can see that for women who are in the 75-plus age group, there was insufficient evidence to make recommendations. So when they're released, guidelines are predominantly intended to be communicated to physicians for application in clinical practice. They're also communicated via press releases to the media, and then the media is subsequently tasked with communicating this information to the public. So it's an understatement to say that these most recent guidelines created a cauldron, and this stems around several reasons that are deeply rooted within both our society and within women themselves. First, breast cancer is very successfully a disease cause which has been supported by industry, families, and women who have united around the now very ubiquitous pink ribbon. And from this has stemmed a history of fear that women were told repeatedly in the 80s that breast cancer was an epidemic. It was blown right out of proportion. And then there was a subsequent report in 1991 from the American Cancer Society stating that 1 in 8 women would had a risk of developing breast cancer by the time they were 85. This number was then reduced to 1 in 9. So what happened that both women and the media seized this opportunity and they united and framed the cause, I don't know what else to call it, in terms of a fight, partly to increase attention to breast cancer and partly to increase funding for the disease. And then lastly, mammography was presented during these past several decades as a way to save lives and empower women. So there's, when we think about a public response, I'd like to frame it in terms of a theoretical model so that we can understand what's happening. And here what I'm doing is I'm using a model that was developed in the communication literature called the Social Amplification of Risk, or SAR. And this model explains how information can originate with the communication message and then progress through institutions and social structures till it ends with the receiver at the end of this sequence of blocks. The response in itself may be either attenuated or intensified by the public psychology or social filters, some of them I've just mentioned, which are then shaped by how people respond to an event. And I'm using the SAR model because it explains the mammography guideline process, which I'm going to go into in more detail. I want you to focus on the first two elements here. The risk event were two events. First, the media press release on November 16th, and then secondly, the scientific release in the Annals of Internal Medicine were two pivotal events that really started this risk event, this chain of events. The risk, with regards to the risk representation, the driver of the guidelines in the mass media coverage, the media was the driving element behind the coverage and the framing of the event that really fueled it. I'm going to talk about each of these other elements individually. The filters were both, as I mentioned earlier, were both psychological and social, and there are patterns that the media coverage tend to correlate with this. And we see this with the pervasive cultural expectations that we have for medicine, being able to only do good, not to be able to do harm, and that always that more care is better than less care. And consequently, the public and the medical profession have, over the past several decades, had increasing faith in medical technology being able to solve both early detection and treatment issues. However, this was not, I underscore this, without the national conversation that's been going on both publicly and privately, which seems to equate the two and has created some confusion that prevention equals early detection and that early detection equals prevention. So the response, I want to spend a little bit of time on this because this is where the very interesting aspects reveal themselves, both with the individual on the left and society. When we look at the individual areas, the individual members of the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force panel were discredited, and the criticism was that there were no radiologists and no oncologists in this task force, and that secondly, that the guidelines relied on mathematical models rather than outcome data. The radiologists chimed in and they said that there were no real potential harms for screening and that they were, the guidelines findings were characterized as being ridiculous and that this was a substitute for cost cutting for them, that they would obviously receive less reimbursement since mammography is now on a biannual basis. The women themselves accused the task force of valuing dollars over lives and working at the behest of insurers or the government to curtail spending for mammography screening. And individual members of the Preventive Services Task Force unfortunately received very hostile and nasty emails from various members of the public and organizations. When we turn over to the right on the societal phase, indescribably, there was a 10-day rise in a media frenzy. that was fueled by the talk shows and television and radio, then the media portrayal was that there was a new federal panel that recommended against mammography for women in the 40 to 49 year old age group. Simultaneously that the mammography guidelines release was the debate that was going on over the healthcare reform, and that some people were taking sides that warned that the payers might in fact reduce coverage, and the members themselves were condemned by their own societies. So one way of measuring public response is to determine the level of interest. And the data that I'm going to present in the next three slides come from the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press, which conducted an omnibus survey from between November 20th and the 23rd. And they asked one question in particular that is applicable here is, which one story did you follow most closely? And it's very interesting that the top three stories relate to healthcare. Mammography came in third, and that's not surprising since 8% of all topics that the media covers are health topics. When we look at this a little more closely, we can see that 35% followed the story most closely, and 27% followed it fairly closely. When we break it down now by gender, we can see that a quarter of the women on the right here who followed the mammography guidelines either agreed, and while 66% disagreed. The middle column, which shows men, shows that a smaller percentage of men agreed with the recommendations, while interestingly, 72% of them disagreed. So what can we take away from this? This tells us that the mammography debate is highly, highly charged, that news travels in multiple channels rapidly to multiple audiences, even though, as I've said, the primary audience was intended to be physicians so that they could care for women within their clinics. And on the mammography debate, there is a very diverse diverse worldviews and different perceptions of risk, and this is partially underlying some of the concerns that we have. So how can we use this information? The social amplification of risk framework helps explain a particular risk event that raised concern and helps in the development of risk management priorities that potentially, if it can be used well, can quell future media and public frenzies. What we're recommending is that there be forward-looking collaboration between scientists and skilled communicators to package the message so that it is intended, understood as it is intended, to try and defray this controversy. We hope that there will not always be controversies in screening, but we know that mammography is a combination of science and policy and science and politics. And my colleague Steve Wolf succinctly summarized this when he said, "Science journalism is supposed to improve communication by bringing scientific information to the public. However, the terms of this debate will probably continue to be discussed, but the goal is to make it less polarized." Thank you.